How can one be disciplined in the practice of Dhamma and not get distracted with the day-to-day events? How can one be disciplined in the practice of Dhamma and not be distracted by the day-to-day events? Some tips. I think the sort of first, that sort of standard tip, which I think almost everybody would give, would be have a regular formal meditation practice, because, and preferably morning and evening, because the act of giving time, space and care morning and evening, saying, well, this is going to be the most important thing for half an hour or something like this, then you've got a way of, in the morning, reviewing how you are and your intention not to indulge, not to harm, not to hate. You know, you've got that, so you've got your, and you, if you do a little puja of some sort, then you've got the opportunity to reaffirm your confidence that there is something that you can learn from. And then maybe, you know, if you have a regular reflection, the five reflections or some reflection that you do regularly, that sort of sets you up as at the beginning of the day. And then at the end of the day, you have a chance to untangle and unravel a bit of what's happened and dedicate the blessings to all the beings that have ever helped you, with a sense of gratitude that you have been helped. And then that gives a... that gives a sort of something for before, you know, as you wake up and as you go to sleep. Gives you something that, you know, give yourself time to do that. You probably don't feel you don't have enough time to take a shower and set yourself up at the end of the, you know, or the end of the day. Yeah, you feel like I have to shower and I have to figure out my clothing for the next day. And then in the morning you have to figure out what you're going to do during the day. But giving yourself, you know, I tell people, you probably say to people, give me 10 minutes to freshen up before I go out, don't you? Yeah, you sometimes say that to people. Give me 5-10 minutes to freshen up before I go out. You don't often say, I don't think yet, give me 5-10 minutes to meditate before I go out. You don't say that yet, do you? People say, "Oh, that's weird," but it might actually. You know, it might actually, you know, change how it is before you go out. The other joke that I've made for years is, you know, in the very old days, probably in Australia and New Zealand and in the UK and that, you know, the dunny used to be outside, yeah, down the path, yeah, or the, you know, the toilet would be outside. Nowadays you're a bit upset if you don't have ensuite. But you don't have in your house necessarily an ensuite meditation room, or even a meditation room at all. Yeah, a place which is a space in your house that's dedicated to meditation. Now maybe there will be sometime in the future. Every house, you know, you'll say 3 bedrooms, 2 dining rooms, and a good meditation room. You know, and the estate agents will be promoting this as a feature. So that's the sort of thing. And then through your daily life, use the spaces or make spaces. I mean, the Thich Nhat Hanh thing was to have a ding going every hour and saying, you know, have your timer set for every hour going ding, and then giving yourself 5 minutes to just be with your breath and be, yeah? But maybe you don't want to make it so formal, but, you know, if you're sitting in front of a computer the whole time, you've got all sorts of people telling you that this is actually probably not a good idea, that you do need to get up every 20 minutes or half an hour and change your posture and that sort of stuff because it's better for your body. And similarly also, for your mind, you know, stopping. And then, but also naturally you stop. You know, you have to go to the toilet or you have to do this, you have to walk from your car. Notice the different worlds that you, when you move from your car park to where you're going shopping, you know, be with the sense of coming to the body and the moving. When you park, when you go to work, be with the sense of being there for going to work. You know, when you open a door and you're entering a different world, when you close the door, you leave that world. You know, and so just in the moment, going to that, and then. As you drive, you can have Dharma talks going, that's fine, or chanting going. I mean, in the old days, the families from Sri Lanka used to come over with a little cassette tape of Parit, yeah? That we used to play at breakfast, as you were making your breakfast. Yeah? That used to be, rather than listen to the news, they would have the Parita going as they were making the breakfast, yeah? It would be something that you would have happening. You know, these the sort of things like that, you can maybe, I'm sure that there's other things that you could be doing as well. But these are some of the things that might help a bit. Try it. And if you do, the thing about trying something, if you try something, really try to do it every day for 3 months. Every day for 3 months. So that you have some perspective on how it's working. You won't do it every day for 3 months, even if you do decide to do it every day for 3 months. But at least you'll have made that determination. And then if it really does work, then you'll know that you can do it and you can keep that going. If you just, you know, if you try it for a week and it really doesn't work at all, then by all means stop any practice that you're doing. But if you try something and you think, well, this might work, this is going well, then do it at least for 3 months. Try to do it consistently daily for 3 months at least. And then you might continue to do it for the rest of your life, you don't know. But that will give you something to work with.
I could ask something further now in the evening, from what I gathered, it's like gratitude and blessings. What about things that have gone wrong during the day when I put them in the evening?
Well, you'll have an opportunity to notice them, you know, because you have a chance, as I said, it's a way of unentangling things. If you've done a job of work, handcraft or something, and you look at it at the end, and you look at it, oh, that wasn't quite right, yeah? Then it's good to notice it's not quite right. And then you put it aside and do another one if you can't repair it. If you can repair it, then you repair it. If you've said something harsh to somebody, or you've said something harsh to yourself, or you've beaten something up, you probably haven't, but you try to do something that corrects it. Yeah. As I've said many times, very few, very foolish people think they never make mistakes. Foolish people don't learn from their mistakes. If you're a bit clever, you learn from your mistakes. And if you're cleverer still, you learn from other people's mistakes, and that's called educating yourself. Any sort of education, any sort of reading that you do to learn something is, or any sort of learning from things is learning from other people's mistakes. Admitting mistakes or acknowledging fault is always considered helpful in the Buddhist asana. Thank you for asking the question. Any other questions?
Question, reflecting on the concept of reward or result. I noticed that in the practice period, you feel like you're going in the opposite direction.
How do you keep your motivation going when you start practicing and all you notice is the difficulties? And you have the feeling, well, it's actually going worse than it was before I even noticed that I should be practicing. Is that reasonably correct?
Yes.
And you feel, well, maybe I'm uncovering things that I would prefer that I didn't bother to uncover.
Sometimes ignorance is bliss.
But it's... what happens, some people with the practice, they don't have difficulties, they just keep going. And it may take them a long or short time for results. For other people, the practice is always difficult, always something that is a stretch and a strain, and there's the sense of this is hard work, and I don't know whether I'm getting any. And sometimes, even with that, the results are slow, and sometimes the results are quick. Those are the four different ways of practice for different people. Easy and quick, easy and slow, hard and quick, hard and slow. So that's just a way of talking. The whole of the Eightfold Path is to be practiced. And practice, you lose maybe confidence in the practice. It's like you run out of fuel. And then if you don't have the fuel, then you don't put the energy into it. And then there's no continuity and there's no way of getting out of it. So balancing all of that is the knowing of what's happening. So you have what are called spiritual faculties. And these are faculties are a bit like capacities, things that human beings inherently have, on the whole. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, receptivity, response, life. We do have the faculty to experience happiness and pain, and we do have the faculty to experience joy and despair. We do have the faculty for equanimity, and then we have spiritual faculties, which are the faculty to have confidence that there is something that we can do that can lead to the end of suffering. And we have wisdom, which balances that, which like questions, is this less suffering for myself and others? And then we have the effort and the continuity, and we balance this with the faculty of mindfulness, of knowing what's happened. So when we have, you know, when our confidence goes down and we run out of effort because we don't have the fuel to make the effort, because we feel it's all going wrong, then, you know, the wisdom faculty comes in and says, well, I'll ask somebody who might be able to help me. Yeah? So it might give me more confidence that it is possible. So I'm just trying to explain how the spiritual faculties work, because the faculty of wisdom balances the faculty of faith. So you start to study and you start to figure out, well, how can I do this? Because all that it seems is that things are getting worse. So what I would suggest is to find more effort and appreciation in the practice. Because I think it's different for different people. I think different people their faith will be rekindled with different things. For some, I think, you know, the easiest access to joy, I think, is appreciation of goodness. You know, for some people it would be reading about other people who've done it, who've overcome, and think, well, if they could do it, then I can do it. One of the things that got me looking at what is my first thought in the morning, when I wake up, what is the first thought? One of the things that got me doing that was this thing of, I was reading actually, I think, a woman's magazine in some dental place, and it said something from the Dalai Lama, who said that he wakes up with a thought of kindness in the morning. And I thought, he's human, I'm human, what thought do I want to wake up with? And then I started working on which thought I wanted to wake up with. But so that sense of knowing that other people have gone through things, so you can read the lives of people who've had really difficult times and still managed to get through it, yeah, which might give you more confidence. The life of the Buddha itself might give you more confidence. And in terms of your own sort of sense of criticism of yourself for not getting it soon enough, not having any sure results soon enough, remember that, you know, noticing what's wrong, you only notice what's wrong with yourself because you wish yourself well, strangely enough. Yeah? All the sense of self-criticism that you have, not good enough, or haven't been able to cope with this, terrible about that. Behind all of that, you actually wish yourself well. And you're wishing to find ways so that you can suffer less now and in the future. And that's your basic movement as a human being. You would like to suffer less now and in the future. And ideally, you'd like to find a sense of happiness and ease which is independent of conditions. Yeah? You would like to be happy regardless of what happens. Yeah? You know, so that your happiness is not dependent upon what's happening. You're not asking somebody else or something else to make you happy. You're not feeling inadequate in the moment. Yeah? That's what you would really wish yourself. So you'd like to be happy independent of conditions. And be in touch with that basic movement of life. So, you know, when you notice that things have gone wrong, or you haven't got the results you wish, or it's too slow, and it actually looks worse than it used to, have the sense of I still wish myself well, and I can figure this out. Yeah, and go back into that, and know that because other humans have been through worse, it is possible. There are other humans whose lives have been a lot worse who have realized the Dhamma. You know, if you're here and you've got some contact with the Dhamma and you're in Australia and it's okay, you're basically in a very good position. So have confidence that, okay, well, maybe other people were worse and they got it better, but still, you know, I can do a little bit now. You know, find ways of appreciating what you have done and find ways of working out what will bring joy now and what will bring a sense of appreciation now and what I'd like to work with now. Now you're married, you've got good support, eh? You've got somebody who's committed to supporting you to be free from suffering now and in the future. And you're supporting somebody else to be free from suffering now and in the future. Yeah? You're not trying to make each other happy. You're supporting others to be free from suffering and have a happiness independent of conditions. So that's something that you can work on. And it's going to take work, it's going to take effort. Yeah? So, and what I've noticed recently is this thing about trying to make somebody happy. If I'm trying to make somebody happy, then I actually, what I'm telling them is that I'm not happy about how you are at the moment. Which is a strange sort of, strange thing, isn't it? Because if you try to make somebody happy, you think that they're no good right now, you have to make them happy. And there's a subtle aversion in there. Yeah? Which is weird, isn't it? It is weird. It's not strong. But there's something in there that there's a sense of criticism happening. So, you know, if you're trying to make somebody happy, you're putting pressure on them. Are you happy yet? Are you happy yet? Well, you're not happy yet. I've been doing enough. You know, and then that puts pressure on them. Yeah? Whereas if you're just happy with how they are and help them suffer less, then their happiness is not, you're not making their happiness dependent upon conditions. You're encouraging them to suffer less. It's not that you don't do things to help people and do things to support people, but if you're trying to make somebody happy, you're going to be disappointed. And if you're looking at somebody else and saying, make me happy, make me happy, make me happy, then you're putting them under a lot of pressure because you're saying, I don't like you, I don't like you. Aren't you? You know, and that's a, you know, because what you're trying to realize is a happiness independent of conditions. And what you can do is help people suffer less and give them the tools so that they can suffer less now and in the future. And you can give your kids, you can give, you know, your spouse. It's not that you won't have joy and appreciation, because that's, you know, there is happiness, but it's not something that you're trying to manufacture, but comes because of the goodness that is inherent in the relationship and in the things. Does that help a bit? Because it seems strange. It seems counterintuitive that, you know, I'd like to make you happy. I'd like to help you understand the Dhamma. You know, I really want you to understand the Dhamma. If you don't understand the Dhamma, I won't like you. I don't care. It's a strange thing, isn't it?
I was just thinking, sometimes you make it worse by saying, I'm doing this for your good.
Oh, God.
You're my son. You're my son. You're
And all they do is they make it worse for them. All you're actually saying to them is, I don't love you. I don't love you as you are because I want you to be better. And that's actually rejecting them. It's a lack of metta. Metta is not dwelling in aversion. And that's really strange. I've only just recently really felt that. I've only just recently felt that, which is, 44 years a monk, and he's just managed to get this far. Yeah. What have I been doing with my time? Terrible thing. I've just been wasting my time.
What are you saying?
Well, trying to make somebody happy means that you don't really like them.
They're not meeting my expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm dwelling in a subtle sense of aversion to them. Yeah? So when you give me something and say, be happy, I've given you this. And then what you're actually saying is, I don't like you as you are. At some subtle level. I'm not sure whether that's actually correct, but it can be stronger than others. But if you give something with the sense of, may you suffer less now and in the future, then there's a sense of letting go. Yeah? I'm not giving you this to make you happy, but I'm giving you this so that maybe you can suffer less now and in the future. And then that requires wisdom, so you learn. Oh, this didn't help them suffer less now and in the future. Oh, I can learn from that. Yeah? And then that's a different feeling from, I give you this to make you happy. Yeah? Whereas if you give it, may you suffer less now and in the future, then you're giving yourself space to learn, and you're giving other people space to say, well, actually, this doesn't help me suffer less now. The future is actually a burden. Yeah? Do you see there's a difference? Karuna is not about making people happy. It's about helping people suffer less. But it's something they really have to work out for themselves. Does that help a bit? Because also, if you're trying to make yourself happy, then it's the same thing. You're saying, I don't like myself. So you don't make yourself happy. Realize happiness independent of conditions. Unconditional happiness. Because if your happiness is dependent upon other things, then you're always going to notice what's wrong. Independent of conditions, because if your happiness is dependent upon what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what your emotions are, then it's always going to be dependent happiness.
How do you switch?
Stop. You stay with the Buddha, who doesn't care. And you just do what's right.
Because in this world, we all get caught up in things.
Yeah. It's called rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Ajahn Sumedho calls it rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. It's going to sink anyway. And all you're doing is making sure the deck chairs are in order. Because this life is going to end.
We have amnesia, we forget us because we don't see.
Yeah. We just keep rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. It's not going
to work. Is it also because it's said to be, when you are in the path of Buddhism, it's an upstream that most of the people are going down. So that's where the struggle is.
Well,
that saying I heard,
go against the stream, or get into the stream. Yeah, or go against the stream. or just flow with the stream. Don't do anything. You know, don't. The personality is not enlightened. Ajahn Sumedho keeps saying that. The personality does not get enlightened. I want to be an enlightened person is always, always, always going to disappoint. Because you'll always think, I'm not enlightened yet. Because I am not enlightened yet is always going to be the thing. I'm not enlightened. I'm not enlightened yet. Are we there yet? This is Australia. The road trips are long. Yeah. I want to be enlightened. I want to be enlightened. It's not going to work like that. Absolutely not going to work like that. Sorry. Pardon?
How would you
enlightenment is to the sense of I. Is how what? Enlightenment is to the sense of I. I've got this written on my thing. Don't take your life personally. Don't take your life personally. Sorry. It's written on my thing. It was the one that was available to me when my last one broke. Don't take your life personally. Ajahn Sumedho's book on that is available from Amazon, I think. Or I think it's available free in Thai.
Did you write it?
Pardon?
Is it a book you wrote?
No, Ajahn Sumedho. Ajahn Sumedho, Lumpur Sumedho. Don't take your life personally. Listen to anything by Ajahn Sumedho, and he'll say, I think, if you, almost always he says, the personality cannot be enlightened. This is the nature of the personality. You can change the personality a bit, and that's fair enough. But you can't, it doesn't get enlightened. Because it's always going to be disappointing, unfortunately. And then it's going to get Alzheimer's, and then it's going to die. Sorry. the old thing with the uncertain, the standard of the holy ones, the standard of standard of the noble ones, Ajahn Chah, I think it's in the 600s in his book of collecting teachings. Uncertain, if you're Sotapanna would say this is uncertain, Sakadagami would say this is really uncertain, and Anagamini would say, oh, really, really uncertain, and an Arahant would say totally uncertain.
Uncertainty,
yes. Notice the sense of when you do stop taking yourself so personally, notice the sense of ease that comes with a smile. Yeah? When you're not making a fuss about something, notice those moments when, oh, it's okay, I'll deal with it. It's not the end of the world. Worst things happen at sea, or whatever it is you say. It's the sense of when you're able to smile at yourself, and you're not asking other people to make you happy, when you're a sense of, I made some mistakes, but I can get over it. Yeah? There are ways of dealing with this. It's okay. Because you know what happens when something goes wrong. Well, you know how it feels when you've got something stuck in your teeth. You just go to that. Now I'm terrible. I've got something stuck in my teeth. I can't get comfortable until I get this out of my teeth. And yes, in some cases you will be able to get it out. Some places you won't be able to. And then you have to deal with it. And you see, you hear of all sorts of people who've, all sorts of tragic things have happened, and they've still managed to get over it. You know? They've not made it something that's actually ruined their lives.
It sounds easy, but quite a challenge.
Well, I think, we have, when we come from a sense of inadequacy, and we keep feeding our sense of inadequacy, I need to get more wise. You know, or even if you do get wise, there's still what you've fed is a sense of, I'm not wise enough. You know, and that's, you know, it's spiritual materialism. You can still enjoy the Dhamma and you can still grow in wisdom. I'm not saying don't grow in wisdom. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that don't be dissatisfied with the wisdom that you already... Well, if you are dissatisfied, if you act from a sense of it's not good enough, then all you're feeding is a sense of it's not good enough. If you come from a sense of, okay, this is what I've got, I can do better, then you're coming from a sense of I can do better. Yeah? Which is, next time you act, then I'll still be coming from a sense of I can do better. Oh, I can do better. Rather than, oh, I'm not good enough, I need to do better. If you act on that, then the next time you act, it'll be, I need to do better again. I need to do better because I'm not good enough yet. Rather than, oh, I'm not too bad. I'll do what I can. Okay. Well, that didn't work so well. I'll do a bit better next time. Yeah? And that's a different feeling. It's a different feeling from I need to do better to I can do better. Yeah? And that's a completely different feeling. You can still admit you're wrong. You can still admit that I don't know enough. But I can do better. That's a completely different feeling. See how one goes like this, and the other one is much more like that. So, have I shut you all up?
Just follow the thought of yourself. I think this is after this. I think if you want to, you know, digesting, try to reflect ourselves, that, you know, yeah, be kind to yourself. Live the life is there that you, you know, you've been, your mom at home, you've got too many cats, many responsibilities for you, not only for yourself, for the whole family, your husband, kids, and works. And
you're doing okay.
Yeah. Everyone alive, that's good.
Yeah, you've got to start with where you are. Rejoice.
Enjoy.
Enjoy and rejoice. Enjoy life. Bring joy to life.
Mm-hmm.
No, bring joy to life. It's not that you can't enjoy life, mm-hmm. or bring joy to life. Yeah? That's mudita. Yeah, it's not that you know. Mudita is that sense of joy and goodness. Karuna is reducing suffering now and in the future. Metta is not pushing away, not rejecting anything. And upekkha is accepting limitation and being sensitive so that when possible you can act through joy. When possible, if you can't act through joy, then act through trying to release suffering now and in the future, and if you can't do that, then act through not rejecting, through metta.
Like my friend says, I'm always looking for the magic pill.
Well, you've got good friends. You've got good friends, that's good. Rejoice in good friends, yeah. I am somebody, I need to do something, and I'm not sure if it's the right thing or if I can do it. Those are the first three fetters. I am somebody, I need to do something, and I'm not sure if it's the right thing or if I can do it. Those are the first three fetters. And then so Ajahn Vajira is going to tell me how to do something to get rid of the first three fetters. It's not going to work, is it? Whenever there's that thought of, I am somebody, I need to do something, and I'm not sure if I can do it or if it's the right thing. There's no way around that. And then you put it on somebody else. So Ajahn Vajira is somebody, he needs to do something to help me get over the first three fetters. It's not going to happen. It doesn't work like that, because that's personality. That's conditioned personality through social conditioning. You know, that's what sends the whole world round and round and round. So don't take it personally. don't take this whole business personally. It's not supposed to be any other way. This is just the way that the world works. And it's not, you know, oh, that's what's happening. And when you notice, well, that's what's happening, then you're not thinking, I am somebody, I need to do something, and I'm not sure if it's the right thing or not. When there's the noticing, that's what's happening. You know, it's disengaged. You put the clutch in. You're no longer getting caught in the gears. And then what you do is you practice the Eightfold Path. Because that's the only thing that's really worth doing. Because that's in tune with Dhamma. And it's not personal. So it's not me that has to tell you something. The Lord Buddha has already told you. And we're very lucky that we have such a perfect, good enough tool, which is all about reducing suffering for ourselves now and in the future. That's really all that we can do. And if our life does that, then that's a blessing. Having a goal is fine, but as you were saying, you know, the time to practice is now, and when we'll reach the goal, we don't know, and whether we'll reach the goal, we don't know. But what we can have confidence in is that the goal or the ideal is a direction that we can point towards. And then if we don't worry about more than that, then right now is where we practice. Right now is where we practice and do the best we can in practicing the Eightfold Path now, here. Knowing now, how am I receiving this moment? How is my heart receiving this moment? What sort of judgments are happening now in this moment? And then how am I responding to this moment? How is the response happening to this moment? And this is something that we know now. And however that is, that knowing gives a sense of ease around it, or a sense of space around it. And there's less complication about it, because what's known is known. It rests in the knowing as we give attention. And then that's just what we do right now. Yeah, and that's where we stay. And we're in the only place we can, which is now and here. And it was the only ever place we're ever going to get to. We're never going to get to a goal, because a goal is not here. A goal is a goal. All we have is here and now. And this is where the practice happens. So a goal is a goal. It's not saying we shouldn't have a goal, but the goal is a goal here and now. It's not where we will reach sometime in the future. You know, because that's...
Like we are on the journey to Sydney.
Yeah.
We think you're having more money here rather than we think, are we there?
Yeah. Except that this is an ideal. What we're talking about is the ideal is, yeah. So we here and now. This is where we have greatest freedom. It's here and now. We can change our attitude towards the past, and we can change the future by how we act now, by body, speech, and mind. But our freedom is now. Our greatest freedom is now. And that's why we don't, not taking it personally now, keep practicing that is a way of like, oh, don't have to do take that. Don't have to make more suffering now. Don't have to make more suffering now. And we know that by knowing what sort of stresses we're putting here, as we receive something or how we're responding to something. In that sense of knowing, as we give attention and receive experience, in the gift of attention. That's the test of your spiritual progress. Is in general unwholesome qualities not increasing or decreasing, and unwholesome qualities increasing? In general, in yourself and in others and the people around you, that's the test of your spiritual progress. Are you making less suffering for yourself and others? Right now, are people around you suffering, making less suffering for themselves and others right now? Is the way that you behave with the people that you meet on the street or the people you meet in the shop less of a problem for them and for others? Your friends and your family. That's sometimes the more difficult one. Because it's my family. Which is very personal. Okay. Thank you very, very much.